It's the twilight of your lifetime, and you know the end is near.
Gotta find her and remind her why she's waited all these years.
She was age is just a number.
Welcome back to Bachelor of Hearts Presents Senior Studies, the Golden Bachelor podcast that asks the question, does recording our finale recap like 6 weeks later than the rest of this season technically make this the first ever golden episode of our show?
I think it does. I think that's true. Yeah.
It's maybe not in the exact prime of its life, but I think it's still got some legs.
And I definitely have some questions about it. Like, I have forgotten some things because you are here, listener, on the Bachelor of Hearts Presents Senior Studies. Max Quinn is me. Xavier RN is them. Hi, Xavier.
Hey, everybody. Hi, Max. My name's Xavier Obetsky-Noonan, and I love the Bachelor. I know who gets married at the end of the Golden Wedding. But I'm not going to spoil it.
Thank you.
Because we're not there yet. And of course, I hate the coronavirus. And yes, as you heard, joining me, as always, is my co-host with the Mo-host, Mr. Max Quinn. Max, how are you?
I'm so good. This is my main question. Was it Gary? Jerry? It's not quite. I haven't quite retained what was going on up there.
Yeah, I've got it written down, but that doesn't help. I'm not sure.
No, Xavier, I am good. I am so happy to be back recapping the finale of The Golden Bachelor. Months after the fact, listener, there was a whole series of The Bachelor Australia in between. If you are joining us from overseas and you want to go back in time and relive the magic that were those hectic 3 weeks in December with three bachelors from down under, you can find everything that you need to find in the Bachelor of Hearts podcast feed. Before we go any further, I'd like to remind you that we're recording on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This always was, this always will be Aboriginal land. Our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. And a big g'day to you if you are a First Nations Bachelor of Hearts listener. Zave, what do you got for me?
Look, I got a lot of stuff for you. It's funny. It's been a little while, not just since we recorded a golden episode, but since we recorded an episode at all. So I feel like maybe up the start. Maybe we should just catch up a little bit. You know, you and I haven't chatted in a second. My first question is, Max, you went on an exotic adventure over the break, right?
That's true. Yes, I did. I went on safari to a mystical town called Ballina in the northern rivers of New South Wales.
So this is fascinating because as far as I'm aware, this is a place that no one has ever been before.
That's right. And it certainly was my first time.
Uncharted waters, in and around the coast of New South Wales. I don't know too much about that area myself. I wonder if you discovered anything interesting or anything you could share with us.
You know what? This intrepid explorer found, look, the biggest prawn that you ever did see.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I cannot believe how big this thing was. You could look at it with
10
binoculars.
To 15 centimeters or something. I'm picturing
We're talking
huge
about
prawn.
Like take a 10 to 15 centimeter prawn and then scale it up, make it cost $900,000.
Wow. So like
give it like
20, 30
seven
centimeters?
Tons of weight. Yes, that's right.
Really heavy, but like, yeah, absolutely massive for a prawn, which in my estimation would be, you know, maybe for our overseas listeners, something like a foot or so in length, you know.
That's right.
Around there.
Yeah, just 1 foot or let's say 9 meters tall.
Wow. Wow.
27 feet tall.
Okay, that's impressive.
Big prawn. It was a big fella. I really enjoyed it. My time back in Ballina was full of highlights. I went swimming. I went stand-up paddleboarding, just like on The Bachelor. Now, here's the thing. This is good batchy goss for you because obviously on The Bachelor in Paradise, when they still did it in this country and probably in America as well, they get out on their subs, their stand-up paddleboards. People call them subs. I found that out. That was really interesting.
Wait, like... Oh, sorry. I thought you said subs, and I thought they were floating on sandwiches.
Six
or
inches.
Submerging in sandwiches,
yes,
as the case
may be. Give or take. They're The muscles in your feet are the things that really surprise me, where like you're really, or at least I am as a man who struggles to maintain balance and a state of upright at the best of times, the muscles in your feet work over time, and then sort of like your little groiny boys, they work over time as well. It was, it was a revelatory bachelor adjacent experience for me over Christmas. I also bought a barbecue.
Oh my goodness. Wait a second. Okay. So I'm hearing a lot of shellfish here. We got a big problem. We got muscles in your feet. Did any of these shrimps make it onto the barbie?
Not quite yet, but I did cook a barbecue just the other night. And let me tell you, the Ballina has come with me to Sydney. Now I'm slanging snags.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so you didn't buy a barbecue in Ballina. You bought a Ballina. You bought blah, 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 blah.
I bought a Ballina barbecue in Sydney, yeah. She sells mussels down, but yeah.
So it's made it to Sydney, and now you're queuing around the block.
Oh, that's right.
There's a queue at Max's place.
Big queue.
10 meters long. Or whatever.
Yeah, 10 meters high.
Oh, that's great.
How are you? Do you have a nice time?
I've been having a nice time. Actually, the most recent thing that's happened to me is I've had a very mysterious stomach bug that's been really bad. Other than that, really good. I shouldn't focus on the negatives. But what have I been doing? Not very much. I've been really enjoying not doing very much.
It's been nice. Have you been practicing your magic?
Actually, Max, you know what? I have neglected my duties as an up-and-coming magician. I think, like, if I had been practicing my magic, our listeners and you would know about it.
Yeah.
Because I do have plans to do it publicly.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. The time got away from me. I would like to start doing that real soon. Because that box of tricks is overflowing with promise and premise, you know?
We go live on the BOH pod Instagram one day as you unbox and then begin to magic some magic from the Apollo Jackson magic kit that I got you for Christmas.
That's a good call. I was hoping you might be able to teach me a little bit about reels and TikTok and stuff. So, because I figure that would be a good series.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'll be just right for us here on the BOH pod. Before we dive into everything that is going on in the world of Gary Turner and his pending nuptials to a woman who won't be named.
Oh, let's set the table. As we're recording right now, the Golden Wedding, which will be announced at the end of the episode we're recapping today, has just aired about 12 hours ago or something. So we were quite late getting to this episode. So we're going to get through this episode so we can get to that episode. We'll be doing our next episode. We'll be covering the Golden Wedding. Very excited to talk about it. I haven't seen it yet. I don't think it's available here yet. So Max, probably you're in the same boat.
Yes, and Xavi, if you are coming here as a listener of the last season of The Bachelors Australia, before we go further with the Golden Bachelor finale over in the US, we want to say that we will be recording in the coming weeks a State of the Batch Nation Australia podcast, where we look at where everything has washed up after the last season of The Bachelors Australia, and we look forward to what might be coming in the future.
Yeah, I think we're interested in talking about like what we learned from that season, where we think it has left us with the, you know, I mean, I hate to do this every time we end a season, but it does feel a little bit ever more like the future hangs in the balance a little bit.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to do a temperature check and see what the vibes are. And talk about what is next for The Bachelor in Australia and also probably for us.
Yes, I think that's a really good thing that we should do. It is now time, though, to talk about the Golden Bachelor finale. And while we were waiting for this episode to air, Xavi, I know that you uncovered a bomb.
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, there's this article that came out just ahead of the finale. So cast your mind back all the way to late November in 2023. We were younger then. Those were our innocent salad days. But it's sort of, there's this article that came out and it sort of sent shockwaves through Bachelor Nation, particularly in the very sort of active viewer base in America. On the 29th of November, Hollywood Reporter published a piece entitled "The Golden Bachelor's Not So Golden Past," which sort of pokes holes in the established narratives of Gary's career history and previous romantic entanglements. And I thought maybe we should talk about it just as a sort of brief, like, background setting, almost like we're creating the context again for what it was like to be alive in late November 2023.
This is a good idea.
For any of our newborn listeners.
Do you know what? Shout out to the listener who messaged us to say that they did, in fact, give birth.
Oh, Julia, yeah.
Yeah, while listening to an episode of the BOH pod. That is one of the most flattering things that has ever happened in my life. And how lovely that there was, there now actually was a newborn listener of the BOH pod brought into the world to the dulcet tones of you and me going probably like, bleh!
Probably, what? Yeah. I think it's really important for young people to have really good role models.
Mm.
And so I do want to issue an apology on behalf of this podcast.
Thank you. It's a good idea.
To Julia and any future, past, present, you know, other babies of the pod. we're doing what we can, but, you know, we take no legal responsibility for how any BOH babies turn out.
Yeah, yeah. We're pod parents, not god parents.
That's right. Exactly. So this story goes with Gary, and I'm not setting up everything all over again. We have a whole season up to this point, but the story goes that Gary retired at the age of 55 after a career in the restaurant business.
A restaurateur.
That's right. At a restaurant where they do pies in the face and encourage people to bring their old vehicles and so you can get a $3 hamburger or whatever the fuck's going on in America.
Great, great.
And, you know, he had a career in that business. He had various management positions in both restauranting and the meat business. hey, there's no business like meat business. however, this article details several more jobs and particularly some more like menial jobs that he's worked since then, which have not really been remarked upon in the show. And interestingly, the article also details a few relationships that Gary had between the death of his wife and his stint on television, none of which have also been mentioned in the show, including a live-in relationship with a woman that lasted over a year. And in the article, there is an interview with that woman who chooses to remain anonymous, but she speaks about the events leading up to their breakup. And the granular details of these events do not paint Gary in a particularly good light. She details an argument with Gary that begins with him commenting on her weight gain. There is a story about how he would ask her to pay for her half of a meal in advance, and then he would go and pay the staff so that he could seem like a big man.
That's so funny.
Isn't that so funny? That really feels like some Tim Robinson, like, you know, yeah, she's eating all the loaded nachos kind of shit. So, yeah, it doesn't paint him in a very good light. And so Gary rushed to People magazine to explain that, yes, he did get into dating again after his high school sweetheart and married partner of many decades passed away. But it became clear to him pretty quickly that he wasn't ready yet. And by the way, he's ready now. And tune into this episode to find out why, brought to you by the kind folks at ABC and Hulu. It was very much like, let's make nice, you know.
Yeah, there was a concerted effort to sweep it under the rug.
Yeah. But, you know, let's talk about it. Bachelor Nation went berserk over this story, so it feels like we should discuss it a little bit, even though it does on some level, like to me anyway, feel like it maybe boils down to like, yeah, no shit. Like the guy is not the two-dimensional, like walking cardigan that the reality TV edit has painted him out to be. But I remember seeing a lot of socials posts and a lot of discussion from people who felt like they'd been lied to, that his reputation's tarnished forever.
Reality TV, no.
I know, yeah. Well, you know, I saw posts on like the Golden Bachelor's dedicated Reddit page or whatever, where they were like, God, I will not be watching the finale. I have lost interest or whatever.
Oh my God. People, Max, get over it.
Yeah, where do you land on all this, Max?
Well, this was like much ado for me. I felt like, oh, wow, this man who, exactly as you say, has been presented as two-dimensional and who the show has gone out of their way to, like, turn into the most what like appeasing version of your stand-in granddad ever.
Yeah, he's a walking hug.
Right, exactly, right? That he might not actually be, and that like life is messy, and that while Gary, you know, may have done some weird things with paying the bill and talking about women's weight and all that kind of stuff, like all of that I think is gross and probably accurate, but I also didn't feel like I didn't feel shocked by this at all.
No, me neither. I think like I sense that there was some hope that Gary could be milkshake ducked, or that, you know, it presents so tantalizing of a target that he has been painted as such a ultimate sweetie pie and like America's beloved granddad and stuff, which like is stupid. Like they shouldn't have gone that hard. I think, you know.
Yeah, but like America's last granddad was Bill Cosby.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like there's definitely that sense of and not comparing the two in terms of these are not apples to apples, but in terms of how much we might like to go after America's beloved granddad, seeing as we were burnt so hard by the first one. I don't know, it makes sense to me that this is like the path that sleuths on the internet might want to go down.
Yeah, exactly. And particularly because this is such a like commercial property, such a like thing that to someone who is not interested in the show or whatever, it's a thing that's being rammed down people's throats in a way and that kind of thing. Like there's a temptation to be like, this presents a you know, an opportunity for me to, you know, which is not to say that these complaints are without any
of course, without
basis
merit.
In reality or whatever. But I just think like the level of overreaction is probably just due to people, you know, every one of us has our own things that we would like to be reacting to on the internet, I suppose. That's kind of just how the internet has shaken out these last few years. So for some people, I think that was just irresistible. But I mean, it seems like much of a muchness when it comes down to it. You know, it's like, I think it came to a head when this finale was being put together because it was taped live and it was taped live in the days after this article came out. And so there was some speculation that it might have to be addressed.
Oh.
There are sometimes things that take place within Bachelor Nation, you know, outside of the official show, but within the world of the, you know, discussion around it or whatever, that do make their way into
the discourse,
like a taped finale.
Yeah.
So like when there's a racism scandal, sometimes that has to be addressed or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some like, you know, are we going to do more damage control within the realms of the official thing? And I think if that were the case, we probably have a bit more to talk about there, but it never gets brought up. You know, and it's, you know, I get it. Like it's, you know, we're downplaying or we're omitting this because it's not convenient to Gary's image, but also because it's not super relevant and there's not that much to be said about it at the end of the day.
Yeah, like, excuse me for not being shocked that a white man in his 70s from the whitest state in America have some kind of a sordid past that was not exposed or that might be a little bit different to how he was presented on the TV. And like, it's a shame that that destroyed the fantasy for some people. And maybe they really needed that fantasy, but I didn't, in order for this show to have been a success.
Yeah. And if anything, it maybe speaks to the fact that like we could have dealt with a slightly more textured portrait of Gary as a human being, beyond the cardigan, you know, image that we got. But that's what we got. And, you know, we'll just proceed with that as our, you know,
that's our baseline
understanding of him, really.
Yeah.
Another thing I really wanted to quickly address, and this is even, you know, less of a big deal, but this is a clarification that we got from a listener and a supporter of the show, Alba, who provides a useful American perspective on the conversation that Teresa had with Gary about her job. So I don't know if you remember this, we were a bit unsure about whether or not she still wanted to be a part of the workforce.
Right.
And so what did that mean for her future with Gary and her, you know, whatever. I can't, you know, I don't remember all the specifics necessarily.
Well, as I recall in the last episode, Gary really didn't know too much about what Teresa did, but it was a big deal to him that she had worked for herself and had been successful. But the question now was like, well, you know, in addition to where are we going to live, are you going to keep working? What does that mean for, like, it's that the first time that they sort of started to turn their attention to, well, what does all of this mean for our futures?
Right, exactly. So Alba explains in a way that probably should have occurred to us at the time that it's all about insurance. Something I was completely not thinking about in the sense that when she was married, her husband most likely would have been paying for full medical coverage. And so she, when he passed away, she was most likely forced to turn her, you know, hobby of stock trading that she talked about into something that would actually help sustain her full time in a way that, like, she may have had some money, but unless you're actually working in America, you don't necessarily have access or, you know, as easy access to health insurance or to healthcare. So she was sort of forced to turn that hobby into a job. Alba also said that retirement plans in the US are typically based on the stock market. And it sounds like Teresa's job is to buy and sell stock for companies that people put their retirement money into in the hopes that they can keep their homes and, you know, keep living basically for the last few years of their lives.
She's like a superannuation broker.
I think so. Yeah. In the sense that, like, superannuation doesn't exist in the same way in America as it does here. But like, you know, this was a helpful reminder to me as a person who is lucky enough to live in a country where things are slightly less horrific than this, in this particular way, at least. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, just as a person who is over 30 and still not very smart about how things like the economy and superannuation and stuff work in my own life, alone, you know, elsewhere, and how it applies to others. So I don't know, hopefully some of our listeners will find that useful in some way too. And the other thing is that, like, I think also the fact that we weren't quite able to tell from the way that she explained it how she stands on this issue might shed some light on the balancing act that Teresa and presumably so many, like, women and people in her position have to walk as someone who, you know, wants to be an independent woman or, you know, wants to be an independent person, I suppose. Gender is part of it, but not all of it. And also to be a potential life partner for somebody, and also, I suppose, to be a potential life partner for The Bachelor.
Yeah, like, I mean, a question that was not asked on this show but seems more pertinent now in light of this information, and thank you, Alba, for it. Why did no one discuss, do you have health insurance on this show? Like, would a life insurance? Would that have been valuable? Like, part of the dance that is probably being danced here, as I think you're getting at, maybe even outright saying, is that Teresa is in a position at the moment of a relative security when it comes to her healthcare. And, well, am I going to give that up? How are you going to care for me if I'm moving across the country for you?
Yeah, exactly. And we don't know the answers to these questions. I have to imagine that it would have come up behind closed doors, and maybe it was just not seen to be particularly, like, part of the very posy brand of, like, you know, acknowledging that death exists, but not really, you know, spending too much time in the details necessarily that the show has been doing. But yeah, it is. It's just one of the elements that, like, should Golden continue as a strain of Bachelor. I wonder whether that stuff will
strain.
Yeah, you know, as a breed, as a, you know,
as a variant.
Yeah, exactly.
As an Omicron.
Right. And make sure, by the way, you have had your latest inoculation, your jabs.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
To make sure you don't become the Bachelor. anyway, okay, look, enough of that, because we are obviously, we're a bit behind it now. This is discourse that's kind of moved on. Let's get on with the show. Let's dive deep into The Golden Bachelor Season 1, Episode 9, Finale. The micro-tease is about what you'd expect. Gary is nervously pacing back and forth, about to hand out his final rose. Not much to say. Mm-mm. We cut to Jesse Palmer, 44, host. in studio in Los Angeles with a crowd of jewel tone wearing super fans in the audience. The jewel tones are the kind of uniform, I suppose, of the Bachelor US live audience. Although I notice in a notable and frankly historic way, there's quite a lot of sequins and glitter and stuff sort of liberally scattered throughout the crowd as well, which I think is a hint, you know, it's a little tip of the cap to the golden status.
I can explain this. Well, so obviously the sequins, you're right, is the tip of the cap, but from my experience in producing TV and particularly TV events where we film an audience, we will say to the audience, a condition of entry is that you wear, you know, only these kinds of colors, please, because we're filming and do you, like light sensitivity and having the right palette of looks is really important. Like another thing that we would do is definitely like no big brand logos on your clothing, stuff like that. So that, companies can't backdoor any advertisement, particularly I have made TV for the government and that would be a breach of editorial standards for us. The reason that you would do this is basically to make sure that you are capturing the best possible kind of audience for the scene you want to set.
Yeah, and everybody looks like they're part of the same, you know, nobody looks like they wandered in off the, you know, whatever. You get this good uniform. And also, like, if you need to blur out the background or whatever, it's not going to create weird blotches and...
Exactly. Yeah,
millions of reasons. But yes, we're signifying this is not necessarily just your usual Bachelor crowd with the golden sparkles and that kind of thing. Plus, as Jesse enthusiastically points out, there is Bachelor royalty in the audience, including the most recent successful couples... Bachelorette Charity Lawson and Dotton Olubeko.
Dotton.
Like Dalton, but D-O-T-U-N.
Okay.
As well as Bachelor Zach Shellcross and Katie Bigger. Katie Schmoller was also there, but she's sitting on Katie Bigger's lap. You can't see her. Stupid. Plus 8 of the other Golden Bachelor women, including every member of Askin. Asking, making big steps into the world, you know?
We're telling, baby.
That's right. As well as Faith, Sandra, Joan, and Ellen. Gary's family. The next Bachelor, Joey Grazadeh, whose season begins in like 3 weeks or something. And later we will see Trista and Ryan Sutter. Pilot Pete's parents, Peter Weber Sr. and Sweet Nums. And even some actual non-Bachelor World celebrities, for instance, Jennifer Love Hewitt is there.
JLH, sick.
Just stopping by. As well as Reese Witherspoon's daughter, Ava. Reese Witherspoon's mother, Betty. And not Reese Witherspoon. Anyway, cut to Costa Rica as Gary discusses with his daughters and granddaughters which woman is the right one for him, setting up the final dates. Teresa will be first. He tells his daughters she's a, quote, professional businesswoman. like she's a category manager at Work Incorporated or something. What was it?
Yeah, that's what, in the most recent Australian season, Lana was a category manager at Work Incorporated.
Can't believe it.
Imagine that business card.
Oh, my God.
You're a category manager at Work Incorporated? I'm a professional businesswoman.
Maybe, okay, second only to the Luke Bateman trading card that I now have.
Yeah.
That's probably the second, you know, the second one in the collection that I desperately want.
That would be really good.
What other Bachelor trading card? Maybe we should issue a deck of Bachelor of Hearts trading
That's
cards.
That's a great idea.
Probably can't. It wouldn't cost that much to make, right?
No.
We could come up with 52...
Bachelor-related things. The Waterford Crystal Glass, for example.
Sure. Oh, yeah. If we're including things as well as people, this is easy.
Easy.
I think we could do it with people even. But yeah, objects is also good because we'd have the piss pot plant. We'd have this is great. Shit. Do we have to delete this from the episode? Too good of an idea? No, we have to generate some buzz first.
That's right.
Listeners, write to your local member of parliament and demand that these get printed. Teresa arrives, is met warmly by the family, and at one point, Gary offers her some orange juice. Strange thing to leave in the edit. Weird thing to leave in the recap. I wonder if I'll talk about it again. Teresa tells Gary's daughters about her late husband. and they're clearly quite affected by the similarity of shared experience there. She sets the stakes high when she tells them, "We want to make the most of the time that we have left."
Do you know one thing that I've learned from owning a barbecue is you actually want to start your stakes pretty low?
That's really funny. Is that true?
Do you know what? I don't know.
I think from my knowledge, you're meant to get a good sear on it and then.
Oh,
that's
probably right.
It's probably the funniest joke I've ever heard. So you're allowed to get away with it.
Ah, thank you.
Chatting with Gary, daughter Angie says, "Do you feel like that fantasy suite brought you any more clarity? Did you knock the boots?"
Oh my God.
So this is our first utterance of the phrase knocking boots on this episode, which we'll come back a few more times. Is this a phrase that you feel like is still in the parlance of the young people today? I mean, we're both in our 30s. Maybe we're not necessarily the ultimate voice on this, but knocking boots, where do we stand?
Look, I saw a viral post the other day that described this woman's outfit as serving a mother quake of 9.9 on the cuntometer scale or something like that.
Oh, yeah. The cunt plane has hit the mother world trade mother center.
Yeah, or, yeah. All know, of this, like, yeah.
The Cuntagon,
I feel like this
something.
Is... Yeah. I feel like this is the parlance of the youth, and knockin' boots is the parlance of Gary.
Yeah, I feel like if you wanted to be a little more modern, you'd at least say, like, "Did you eat her ass?" That would be great. Yeah, well, nowadays, obviously, you know, the boot technology has moved on so that you're more likely to have, like, a boot doorbell.
Yeah, it's true.
Or even, like, one of those little Ring cameras.
Yep.
Which, by the way, is great for when you're eating us.
Yeah, did you eat a ring?
Good.
That's a good show.
Gary replies, "We're not talking that," to which Angie says, "Woo." I think it's very funny because, like, we definitely, I mean, it's partly because it's 6 weeks since we recorded the Fuck Week episode, but it did feel like we had kind of moved on from that. But, like, the producers maybe were a little bit annoyed that Gary didn't explicitly go on record about what happened. And they're just, like, asking everyone to bring it back up again.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, let's make sure we get this.
Right. So anyway, let's talk more about what happened behind the closed doors, you know. The studio audience laughs. Everybody's charmed by this. Maybe I'm being weird about it. I'm definitely being weird about it when I'm talking about the ass eating, but that's okay. It's 2024. Get with it. Gary tells Teresa, "I just want to remind you that I love you and I'm overjoyed when I say it now," and they make out. Things are going well for Gary and Teresa. No spoilers. Another thing that I noticed, and probably never noticed leading up, you know, in the many weeks we've been covering this, is that I'm the only person, I think, or maybe you and I, are saying Teresa when they say Teresa.
Teresa.
Like hard S and also the T and R are right next to each other.
Yeah, the H doesn't count.
I will never change.
No, me neither. It's Teresa. Pronounced properly, Jerry.
Exactly. Jerry. Yeah, exactly. Look, maybe we should have known they were meant to be together because both of them have the slightly unconventional pronunciation, you know? Gary arrives at Teresa's place for their final date, saying, "Look at you looking all gorgeous and stuff." And Gary reveals that the orange juice that he gave her before had vodka in it and he didn't realize. Alarm bells.
Daddy drunk.
That's a fucking red flag right there.
Mm.
Don't do that.
Do you think that he's spiking her?
Well, I mean, look, I believe that he didn't know that it happened.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which is...
Been spiked by the show?
No. Well, maybe. But I more just like, it should be a warning to you that your partner does not know where is and is not alcohol. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, okay.
I don't know. It's like Teresa says that vodka and orange juice was the first thing she ever got drunk off and it made her sick to her stomach. To me, I'm just like, Gary, you need to be a little bit more careful, my dude.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't read anything into this. I was like, whoops, that's funny.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm overblowing it a little. But we learned that Gary used to wear dorky horn-rimmed glasses, which Teresa says sounds very attractive. And does he still have them?
Elvis Costello style.
Yeah, I used to have kind of horn-rimmed.
Yeah, you definitely did.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely used to have dorky glasses. And in fact, they still do.
But I think the dorky glasses of old are now the cool glasses of today.
Well, you know, time plays tricks on us all, doesn't it?
Mm.
Have you ever had glasses?
You know what else
glasses?
Plays tricks?
What's that?
Apollo Jackson.
You're so right.
Have I ever had glasses? Yeah, I have glasses for some reading.
Why do I never see you wearing them?
Well, I also have, like, for example, these ones here, which I use as blue light glasses for when I'm staring at my screen for too long.
Oh, they're cute.
Yeah, thanks.
Listeners can't see, but imagine Max being cute. Oh, you already were? Oh, that's nice.
Ah, that's really nice of you. You guys.
Yeah, come on.
Stop. No, come on.
Keep enough. Going. Leave them in the comments.
Yeah, yeah.
The two of them say that they love hearing stories about each other's dead exes. I don't remember that. Apparently that's true.
I feel like that's maybe the most morbid way to put it.
I may have summarized that a little too much.
Babe, I love hearing stories about your dead ex.
Tell me more about how they died. Teresa says she doesn't want him to pick her unless he's 1,000% sure.
Hey, I got a special delivery from DeadX.
For when it really, really has to get there after the person is dead.
Yes.
You know, if you look really close at the DeadX logo, there's actually, you can see a little arrow in it because that's how it got killed. It got shot with an arrow. Yeah, Teresa's like, don't pick me unless you're 1,000% sure. And Gary says he won't propose or give her a rose if he's not 1,000% sure. If he's not 1,000% committed, repeating, it'll be 1,000% or nothing. The 1,000% thing is uttered three times here. That's 3,000% in total. It's too many. Teresa ITMs, he said, I love you to me. So did he say, I love you to her? At the end of the day, someone is going to get hurt. I feel like if I had been writing this recap, this is a recap that I wrote a couple of weeks ago. We just didn't get time to record. Mm. If I had been writing it now, I would have cut a lot of this. I'm like, yeah, no shit. Speaking of which though, sexy dancer Leslie is up next. She recounts.
Back.
That's right. Back from the dead. She recounts the incredible relief that she felt on their overnight date when he said the word fuck in front of her. The simple fact of being able to swear in front of her made her feel way more comfortable. I love this because it is so believable either as a this person is being their real self in front of me thing or as this person's words are not currently being recorded and broadcast to millions of people around the world thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like it's breaking down both of those barriers at once. By the way, I'm assuming it's fuck. It is bleeped out.
Yeah.
It could be like...
It could be something way worse.
It could be a lot worse.
When he said, eat ass.
That wouldn't be so bad. I was thinking
fine.
Worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gary clarifies that the word... whatever it was followed by an exclamation mark, not a question mark, which
okay,
gets a huge laugh. So one assumes it is fuck, which
yes.
I think this is one of the funniest things Gary has said.
It's a very versatile word when you think about it.
Sure. Well, isn't it like, I don't know everything about this, but I think the rating system in America is like, you're allowed to say certain swear words in certain contexts to get a certain rating,
uh-huh.
But like, if you use fuck as a verb, I think it's different to using it as just like an exclamation.
Or a noun. Or a proposition.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or an imperative.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think is fun. I think that's just a fun like technicality of like someone just said the word, I suppose that's okay. But if somebody says it like they want to do it or something, then like,
yeah.
Whoa!
Aside from being, you know, a huge grammatical inconsistency.
Sure.
You're never supposed to finish a sentence with a proposition.
right. But I think this is probably one of the funniest things Gary's... Like, he's quick with this clarification of like...
He's
no,
good.
No, it was, you know. The family loves Leslie, but she talks about Gary mentioning till death do us part. And she has some anxiety about that. After living through two marriages that she was expecting till death do us part from... and then it didn't end up happening. This is going to be a big part of her through line. But it is all that she's ever wanted. And this is on Gary's mind too. He tells his daughters that he's stressed about making sure he ends up with a woman he can't live without. Thank you, Trista, for the rest of his life. I am certain we're going to hear those words again at the Golden Wedding.
It's funny, in the previous relationship that he had, that we learned about in that article, it's alleged that he had said the same thing to that anonymous person. And then it turned out that, you know, there was maybe a missing link in the communication. And what he was actually saying was, till death do us part.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and then he went.
Oh, no.
Because he had to get
He's got a hearing aid.
Yeah.
And they split up.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's how it went.
Were you there?
Spent too much time with my dad over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, how strange. Did he teach you to swim? Oh, you said
he taught Lauren to swim.
Really?
Yeah.
Hang on a sec. Lauren never swim?
Well, she swim, but, you know, not like...
She never learned the original...
Not the Frances Quinn method. Like, it's not. It's like the 11 secret herbs and spices of swimming.
Yeah. You know, I never learned to swim the way that Frances would teach.
Well, come on. We'll put you in the bay across the road in Ballina.
I mean, I hate to invite myself, but, I mean, come on. I could drown any day.
Yeah, this is it.
All those times I'm getting into bodies of water and... Max, have you heard about... I'm doing tangents on this episode. I hope you know. Did you hear about the new movie Night Swim?
Is it based on an REM song?
It's not, although it probably plays over the end credits, if I had to guess.
Okay, no, I don't know anything about it.
It's a new horror movie. It seems like it is in the world... I mean, it's not, but it's like... It realizes how successful the beach that makes you old, or, you know, the doll that makes you die, or the whatever, the blank that makes you blank was. So this is a movie about a swimming pool that makes you die if you go in the swimming pool.
Uh-oh.
I don't know much more about it other than that, but it's the toast of film Twitter in early January, partly because it's like one of the only new movies coming out, but also partly because it's kind of funny as a premise to be like, just don't go in the pool, you know? you could avoid that. A lot of people are being like, I believe I could outsmart this pool that makes you die by simply not going in the pool.
Oh, do you know what? The proof of concept of this film was filmed in the backyard of Michelle Branch.
Really?
Yes, there you go.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yep.
So that's funny that, because normally if a branch gets in your pool, you have to clean it out.
Yeah, the branches were everywhere.
I was 50-50 on whether me explaining that movie to you would make you go like, let's go see it.
No.
Okay. I sense from you that you like a movie that can, its premise can be summed up in one sentence.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
you
don't
you
go
were
in the pool.
Keen on the cocaine bear. You were keen.
Oh yeah. I like the cocaine bear. I'm a bit iffy on the, Sydney Sweeney, Glenn Powell one.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It's getting some bad and some good reviews. The premise is it's two people in there in a romantic comedy together, and they don't make them anymore, so you have to go see it. And also, the city of Sydney is in the background, and also the person of Sydney is in the foreground.
Why could... Why don't they make rom-coms anymore?
Because they don't... Well, a few reasons. One is they don't travel super well. Normally, like... I mean, kind of like any comedy is like fairly time and space specific. So they don't tend to make a huge amount of money, even though they're inexpensive to make. Studios in this day and age would rather spend a lot of money and make a lot of money than spend a little bit of money and make a little bit of money.
Got it.
The other thing is there have just been, you know, over the last 20 years, like some underperforming ones. And so they've just decided it's a risk.
Got it.
But also it's because they're cowards.
Thank you. I think that's a much, much better way to explain it.
Yeah. My friend Susie posted this review of the film Anyone But You, starring Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney, which I am tickled by. I may never see the movie. I may see it in the next 2 days, but this review will always be with me. Thought my mum made a Chappie tweet joke. Now I might have to explain. Do you know the Chappie tweet?
Nope.
So the Chappie tweet is... Wait, hang on. Maybe I can find it.
Whispering to date while watching Chappie when Chappie first appears on the screen. That's Chappie.
Yeah, that's the Chappie tweet. Legendary
who's
tweet.
Chappie.
It, you know what? It doesn't really matter. Chappie's a robot. Okay. Chappie's a robot who's in the movie Chappie.
Okay.
Thought my mum made a Chappie tweet joke when the movie started when she leaned over to me and said, "That's Sydney," but she actually meant the city and did not know, in fact, that she was named Sydney.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Good stuff. Any other movies you want to talk about? I could do this for ages. Okay. Wonka, what are your thoughts? You going to see him?
No.
Well, there's chocolate. That's my review. This is just for roughly 1 to 3 people. Gary tells Leslie, "Tonight we get to have a little more time and just you and I, okay?"
Whoa. Gary tells Leslie, "Tonight we get to have a little more time.
Oh, thank God.
Just you and I, okay?"
My God, I can't believe that I forgot to do his fucking voice. That's the reason we're doing this episode.
I know.
Earlier in the week, you were like, maybe it's so late us doing this, we should combine this with the Golden Wedding. And I was like, no. We want some time. We want to spread our legs out. We want to enjoy. We want to luxury. We want to
man spread all over this podcast feed.
We want to sun ourselves by the pool that makes you die. and I'm messing it up. But yeah, he's sort of anxiously approaching this. You know, he goes like, "Just you and I, okay? All right. Yeah. So, what do you think? Are you ready to go? What do you think?" And Leslie says, "Well, I never want to leave, but I am looking forward to seeing you later, and yeah." And Gary says, "Well, it's probably about time for me to take off."
This is so uncomfortable.
It's really uncomfortable. I think they are leaving this stuff in just to torture us.
Yeah.
The reason I left it in the recap as well is to torture our listeners, something I love to do. That night, Leslie tries her best to course correct from this awkward mom. The two of them settle on the couch with a big pour of wine. And she says, "I could tell you weren't your usual Gary self today." And Gary says the pressure's getting to him and he's sorry that he hasn't handled it as well as he could. And so she produces a gift for him. Or, you know, a producer produces it. And he unwraps this leather-bound book of their best moments together, including production photos of their dates and also the date card from their single date, which Leslie kept. This is such a good move. I think this is like this is the exact same move that we saw on The Australian Bachelors, although that took place in the chronology after this.
I really like this as a move from Leslie, but even more so, I like it as a move from the producers, who at this point, I presume, know that it's probably not going to go her way, and they have sensed an opportunity to tug the heartstrings even more by getting her to give him this beautiful, heartfelt gift.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a knife twist, huh?
Yes.
The other thing that's funny about it is because nobody is fooled. I don't think a soul on earth is fooled Leslie did this on her own. But like they've not even bothered with the artifice. I think like the photos, you can see the photos that are in this little book, this little leather-bound album, and they are very, very specifically like taken by the producer,
or
like
stills.
Even like screenshots. Honestly, like there's a photo of them making out against the wall that like someone else must have taken, and like clearly makes that moment, whatever it was, seem much less cute because you now realize that there was a camera person like right up, you know, in their face while they were doing it.
Like, no, I think that that's just a clip from the show. Like, I think that's just clip from the stills.
Maybe you're right. Yeah. Yes, she points out there are plenty of blank pages at the back for their story to continue.
It's cute.
A good line. Very nice. This is always funny to me though, when it's like, this thing has been lovingly prepared by some underpaid.
A man named Greg.
Right, exactly. Some work experience kid, you know. Gary says, "It's just been so much fun. Every moment that you've chronicled in that book, it's just been so much fun. Thanks for everything you've done for me, and I hope I've done the same for you." You do not want to hear this.
No, this is the kiss of death. Yeah.
Yeah. Leslie says, "You make me feel whole. you make me eat whole." And Gary says, "Thanks for that."
No. Not this again.
Leslie says, "I can't imagine being without you now."
Oh.
And Gary says, "That's huge." Brutal. Leslie tells Gary, I love you very, very much. And Gary replies, that's such a special sentiment.
Oh, like he knows what he's going to do and he's lost, like he's all at sea here.
Yeah. And this is like 12 hours after he was telling her that he loved her and that she was the one. It's this brutal, extreme
contrast.
And that
he's going to pick her pretty much. Like,
right, exactly. Yeah. This is also the moment that beloved American television and, I guess, film actress Jennifer Love Hewitt is in the floating head box on screen. And she is just looking the most distraught that I've ever seen someone look in my life.
Mm.
We see her silently mouth the word, no. And it is all coming crashing down here. Gary doesn't even really say anything. It's just clear from his body language. Leslie begins to tear up and he holds her in his arms. After a long moment of silence, he tells her, be happy. And she says, I want you to be happy too.
Jennifer Love Hewitt looks like she's seen a ghost.
Are you looking at it? Oh, you just saying that? I was like, oh, Max has pulled up a screen cap. That's a good idea. But no, you're just being funny again.
Just thinking about the career of JLH.
Mm-hmm. What else has she got in there if you have any?
What was her song called? Bare Naked? That was a great song.
Oh, she did do music, didn't she?
Yeah. I think she's done a couple of records.
You know, I have not paid enough attention. I know what she did last summer. She has 4 albums.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know.
She did heaps of singing. Bare Naked, such a good song. And there was another single as well that I remember.
It's been. Did I send you that clip of the Bare Naked Ladies on an old season of Bachelorette?
You did.
Yeah, they just rocked up. It was great. They had the Bachelorette and many of her men in one of their music videos.
That's right. Yes.
And then they released an alternate version. And that one is the one you can find nowadays on YouTube.
Canada's favorite band.
Sure. I have no further comments on Jennifer. They hug again by the door, and as the rejection is sinking in, she asks, is there something you want to tell me? To which he replies, no, just that I have a tough decision to make, something that's harder than I ever thought possible. Brutal. Gary walks out the door, takes a seat on the stairs, weeping. We cut back to Leslie, who's crying as well, and says, seemingly to an off-screen producer, well, I'm definitely not confident now. I know why he was off today. I know exactly why. Gary realizes he needs to go back and talk to her. The two of them reconvene on the couch. The big glasses of wine are now almost empty. We cut back to the studio audience, who all gasp with disbelief that they are left on tenterhooks, except one guy way in the background who kind of goes, ha, 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 kind of like Wario.
Did they invite Wario to the Golden Bachelor finale? Was he one of the celebrities?
There's every chance, although I do feel like we would have seen footage of him if that were the case.
It's true.
My guess is that he might have been hired as a producer. He's like taking some sadistic glee from the suffering and misfortune here.
Wah.
Yeah, he's chomping on a big clove of garlic and going, wah. Really good. After an ad break, Gary tells Leslie, I've kind of made a decision about how I... You know what? I feel like my Gary has gotten too posh in a way.
Oh, you think?
I don't know. There's something about the voice. It feels a little too refined.
It's very rounded at the moment.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm out of practice. I didn't do any in the Golden Batch. I'm sorry, in the Bachelor's Australia season. Losing my touch a little.
Do you want to send it to me and I'll have a go?
Sure. Yes.
So Gary tells Leslie, I've kind of made a decision about how I want to go about this. I have fallen in love with Teresa, and that's the direction I'm going to take.
And Leslie says, so everything you told me the other night was a lie? Gary says, it was true then, but things have changed. Leslie says, I knew it when I saw you today. We weren't off, you were off. And Gary continues,
you're both wonderful. But only one of you is right. Leslie, I am so sorry.
Believe me, had I known this would be how much pain I would cause someone, I would never have taken the first step on this journey.
This stings because either it means Gary has never seen the show before, you know, never even took the time to like watch a season, you know, even when he got offered the role, he wasn't like, I'm going to go and, you know, go on bachelorarchive.com and check it out or whatever, you know. He's just like, I'll just sign on the dotted line. No big deal. Or he's lying and he knew exactly how things were going to end. And he's just being, you know, maybe trying to placate her. Yeah. Which I guess is what you ask him for. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that that's like, I think that Gary is wholesale doing the right thing by not inviting Leslie to stand in a big, beautiful dress and then get dumped in front of the nation. And to try and do this a bit more quietly and sincerely.
Do you think that she would believe him saying that, though?
No, because at this point she doesn't believe that he believe him in terms of everything that he was saying yesterday. So there's no reason for her to continue to trust what he's saying here. And it's like he's trying to dig himself out of the big hole that he's created and that the show have put him in, because I think that he has been made to be a bit of a rube by this.
Yeah, I guess there is some comfort in like nice words for the sake of nice words, but I don't think either of them are particularly helped by this, really, I guess. Leslie says, it's typical. It's my life. This is how it goes. And Gary tries to comfort her.
That's not it. No, don't think that.
And Leslie says, it doesn't matter, Gary. No offense. I can think whatever the fuck I want.
That rules. It's so good.
That rules. If only Leslie had said fuck 12 hours earlier, she and Gary might have ended up together. Through tears, she says, nobody chooses me. Now everyone has to see how broken I am. The other night, you made it sound like you chose me. You led me down a path and then you took a turn and left me there.
He did.
And it's mind-boggling, to be honest, how you can talk to me all night, say you love me, and then one day, not even a day, 12 hours later, you changed your mind.
Yeah.
I poured my heart out. I fell in love with you. The only good thing is that now I don't have to walk down in that $60,000 dress with the diamond earrings and get on that platform and be completely embarrassed. Mm-hmm. That I thank you for. Interestingly, we actually saw footage of her wearing that very dress and those earrings in the preview promo that aired in the previous episode, which was included, you know, in the like coming up next time or whatever.
So we didn't, so they made her film that?
That's what I'm guessing, right? Like just to throw viewers off the scent. I mean, obviously, like if we only saw footage of one of them wearing the expensive dress and the earrings or whatever, like there would be no who will end up winning or whatever. But like the fact that she gets trotted out, it must just be a contractual thing from day one or something. Like, we will have you film that B-roll footage. Like, in advance is the best case scenario.
I think that's exactly how you do it.
It's like after the breakup, after this happens, they're like, have to try and convince her to put it on. And I don't think that's happening, right? It's horrible.
What they're doing is a step through with the contestants to go, now, if you are chosen, you'll wear this dress, you'll be here, you'll do this, and they use that as their opportunity to capture the B-roll.
The dress rehearsal, yeah.
Yeah.
Gary realizes that he can't say or do anything to comfort Leslie. She says, at the end of the day, I want you to be happy. Teresa's a great girl. I have nothing bad to say about her, but I'm just blown away. Gary sees himself out. Leslie positions herself away from the camera and then leaves the room to cry somewhere more privately as the handheld cameras pursue her. She ITMs, I'm tired of putting myself out there. Time is running out.
Aww.
Rough. Gary is comforted by the warm, hostly embrace of Jesse Palmer, 44 host. A real human man who has been seen crying on television and is therefore not a robot, or at least a sufficiently advanced one. Gary tells him, I took a really good person and I fucking broke their heart. I hate myself and I hate everything right now.
You child.
I think the only time I've ever felt worse in my whole life is when my wife passed away. And this is a goddamn close second.
Jesse emotionlessly says, I'm sorry, with a glossy-eyed expression on his face. Gary says, because I think Jesse's role here is like to not interrupt this, right? He has to be seen to be providing some, you know, level of comfort or duty of care or whatever. But also like the producers do not want Gary to be sufficiently comforted so that he will stop crying.
That's right.
The producers want as much Gary crying footage as they can get their hands on. Mm-hmm. As much as Gary
is gold.
The sweet, you know, lead of the show that we're rooting for, the Bachelor franchise.
This is the look ahead drama of like this season on The Bachelor.
Totally. And in fact, like this is a clip that we've seen a lot of times at this point.
Yeah.
Partly why we're not really reacting to it. Exactly. Yeah. Gary says,
that's an image I can't get it out of my head. And I don't think I ever will get it out of my head.
It's Kylie level image. The shot dissolves from this footage directly to Leslie sitting on the hot seat on stage next to JP44H. And the crowd murmurs with anticipation as we see a tear slowly roll out of Leslie's eye and onto her cheek. She gets a round of applause, perhaps just for the tear. Maybe they're not even clapping for her. They just, you go, tear.
One tear equals one applause.
That's right. Making its great descent. She tells Jesse she's feeling it all again, watching it back. She was devastated. She's devastated again now. She says she was 100% confident she was going to be chosen.
Of course.
I was too.
Who wouldn't be?
Their relationship felt like it was reaching new heights. She had written her vows. They'd planned a whole life together. Now she has to endure the reunion with him, and he is brought out on stage. Ooh. She begins by rattling off the things that she found special about their relationship, telling him she could be authentically herself with him. He was constantly demonstrating how much he cared about her, and all she wanted to do was make him happy. Ooh, the buttholes of the nation are clenching. No one's eating any of those. They're all... How is that the running theme of this episode? I did not predict.
I don't know.
The most important part of him that she fell in love with was his integrity. She says, quote, everybody knows what you said on camera, but only you and I know what was said overnight. I would never share that with anyone. It's our private time. But those words gave me 100% certainty that I was your girl and we were going to get engaged. Knowing that you were leaving for your date with Teresa, I wasn't scared. I wasn't envious. I was ecstatic because I knew you had to go through the process. But I went and picked out the most beautiful blue dress, the color of our eyes. It was the happiest day of my life. Your words meant so much to me, and that's why I was blindsided, because I wasn't sure what happened. I don't know where it went wrong. It's ultimately your choice, and I've said that all along. But you also had the choice not to tell me those things. Saying I love you was enough for me, but the other things we talked about, plans that we made, I was devastated.
Yeah.
Max, I've been a bit unwell, and reading those words again has really brought me back to that place. I'm feeling simply nauseous.
It's awful, and she is bang on the money with everything that she has said here. Gary has made the cardinal sin of bacheloring, which is overcommitting to three different women. And this comment about how what she fell in love with was his integrity, combined with the article that got released a couple of days beforehand, is a little bit of paint stripper for the veneer of Gary, I think. Because, look, we do want to fall in love with him, but Leslie is 100% right in this scenario. He didn't have to go that far, even though I think that the show also did a really, really, really good job of... making probably him feel like he did have to go that far, making him feel like that giving Leslie that surety was not just warranted, but also necessary.
Yeah. I guess we'll check in after the recap and talk about like the big question, which is like, does the positivity of the outcome with with Teresa, outweigh the negativity, you know, and like, have they done enough in setting up the golden wedding to make us feel like that will be a good and wholesome, you know? Let's talk about it. Gary says he came onto the show thinking he was ready to go through the process, but while his head was ready, his heart wasn't. We are always, always doing the head-heart divide on a Batchy finale, I think. Oh, actually, did it come up in Bachelors Australia? Maybe it didn't explicitly.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like maybe we got away with it. Like,
I think we did.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, partly it's just like the head-heart thing comes down to the binary of it all. And when you have six people, or five, I guess five people, as we did in Bachelors Australia, we're not so much doing a contrast between two, you know? So even though two of the three couples ended up with a choice between two women, there was less of like, well, one is like this and one is like that.
Yes.
One is an apple, one is an orange. And there was more of just like other things going on.
That's right.
Yes.
I wanted to give every person I was with my complete commitment, my undivided attention. And because I did that, I got caught up in moments, said I love you. And in those moments, I meant it. You were the person I believed was my person until I suddenly knew you weren't. It didn't really go wrong. It was just better with someone else. Believe me, I am so terribly sorry. I'll never forgive myself for the pain that I caused along the way. I wish there was a better way of doing it, but in my own imperfect way, I couldn't find a way to do it more graciously.
It's tense. She doesn't really accept the apology.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily adding a huge amount more to what he's already said.
No.
But I do sense that he means it. I'm just like left uncompelled on some level, you know?
Yeah. I think that he does mean it when he says that he meant it in the moment. It just doesn't go far enough because he went too far. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's like what's she supposed to do with that?
Kind of nothing, right? Like, there's no amount of information that will make it feel better for her, and so this feels more for him than it does for. This apology feels like it is more for him than it is for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And perhaps more for the audience and stuff too. Leslie says she's not angry, she's just hurt, but she wishes Gary and Teresa the best. Gary earnestly hopes that she finds happiness too.
I do think that through the course of the show, your confidence and your hope and the humor that you brought is so attractive to so many men that you should enjoy your near future.
This feels to me like a good reference to have on your CV when applying for Golden Bachelorette.
Yes. Yes.
Which, I should add, we now know is happening. They are officially casting. We do not know who the lead will be. We do not know whether it will be an existing Golden contestant or whether it will be a newcomer or some other, you know, whatever.
Combination thereof.
But this is the point at which Leslie is whispered away, perhaps by Jennifer Love Hewitt. Was she on Ghost Whisperer?
She was on Ghost Whisperer.
Okay, great. Awesome. Yeah. Thank God.
She saw a ghost.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Was she on Horse Whisperer or was that a guy? Do you remember the show The Horse Whisperer? It's a reality TV show.
I don't think that was JLH.
Horses this is a film? I thought it was
a Western romance with Scarlett Johansson.
Okay, I'm getting mixed up. It was a novel.
Robert Redford.
Was there not a reality TV show? Hang on. Horse Whisperer, reality show. Horse Whisperer TV series? Come on. Wait, what? What's the name of the show where people brought their horses in to find out what was wrong with them?
Harry's Practice?
Wait. Hold on. The Real Horse Whisperer? No, that's not it.
The Real Horsewives of Beverly Hills.
Okay, this appears to be something I made up. I have been unwell.
Yep.
Maybe it was in a fever dream.
This might have been something that you dreamed, unfortunately.
I have had some weird dreams. Won't go into it, but... People get as a more detailed look into my psyche on this podcast than they ever asked for anyway. I don't think they need further detail. Hi, listeners. Hope you're well. Just to save you an email, yes, I did look it up. And yes, the TV show is called The Dog Whisperer. There are no horses involved. Thanks. Bye. So, yes, that's it's time to pivot from extreme tragedy to the happily ever after. We watch Gary get dressed and gaze out over the Costa Rica scenery as he ITMs.
At the start of this journey, I said to myself, how lucky would I be to find a second true love in my lifetime? And today, I'm going to get down on one knee, look at Teresa, and ask her to marry me. When I looked toward the volcano, I was asking Tony if this was the right thing to you. I'm saying a prayer, and my prayers go to her that she'd be guiding me, and I'm pretty comfortable with how she would feel about it.
Max, did Tony die in a volcano?
It does seem like there is something going on there, and like there might be something that Dante or I don't know, the animals of Mordor, Smeagol, might have to answer for here.
Yeah, someone's got to be responsible. Is it possible, yeah, she was cast into the fires to, you know, destroy the great evil before it could fall into more powerful hands?
You know, she sacrificed herself. She died doing what she loved.
Being consumed by lava?
That's right.
Well, they lava. Were in lava. Mm-hmm. That's the laugh that gets. That's a new laugh for 2024. Mm-hmm. Trying it out.
It's like a borderline a nay, isn't it?
It is a little. That's my Jennifer Love Hewitt. I'm not saying Jennifer Love Hewitt is a horse. She just whispers them. And by that, I mean ghosts. I'm so messed up, Maxie.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesse Palmer, 44, horse, greets her, and she tells him she's extremely nervous, has no idea how his time went with Leslie, and feels concerned and anxious. And Jesse helpfully says, the time's come. Gary's waiting for you. I understand this is the host's duty, but it never ceases to amuse.
It's really good.
As Teresa approaches Gary on the platform, what do we call it? Dumpsville? Dumping grounds?
Yeah, I don't know.
Dumptropolis? Dumptopia? This is not where she's getting dumped, of course.
Dumpcano.
Dumpcano, yeah. Watch out for a dumpcano if you're eating. This is gross. Why is this episode like this? I wish I could blame you, but it's really not your fault, Max. Gary praises Teresa on her graceful entrance. They share a kiss. And Teresa says, I know how sometimes it feels like the whole world thinks that love is only for the young. Quite honestly, at the age of 70, I was beginning to feel that myself. After Billy died, I was at the point where I thought I was going to live the rest of my life alone until I met you. As time went on, I felt it more and more and more, to the point where I'm so madly in love with you, Gary. I feel that life isn't over, that the best is yet to come. Now that I've found you, I don't ever want to let you go. I want to spend the rest of my life with you.
Okay, so Gary says, this morning, I had a million emotions running through my head. How did a guy from nowhere, Indiana, end up in Costa Rica at the age of 72 looking for love? And then I started thinking about that first night and how, with your entrance from the limo, I'd seen all of you. But fortunately, that wasn't the case because there was so much more to discover. I border into Batman sometimes when I'm doing my Gary. When I woke up this morning, it was difficult. I had really mixed feelings. I got to the point with the questions I had asked myself about. How did I get here? And is she the right girl? And came to the realization that you're not the right person for me to live with. Long.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, bugger. He's pulled a fucking honey badger.
This is a really long pause. It's It's terrible. And are we thinking he's dumping both women?
This is cruel.
I mean, it is like, cruel.
What is what's achieved from this? I don't know.
And then he says, "You're the person I can't live without."
And then, you know, she likes this. I was like, what are you doing to this poor woman?
Why would you hurt her in this way?
This is clearly a producer mandated. Like, not only is he, he's precedenting her. He's precedenting her. But also he's precedenting her with the slogan, you know, with the mantra of this season.
Yes, yes.
The not just someone to live with, someone you can't live without. Couldn't be more on brand. I don't know how, like, this benefits them. Really, in any way, like it's not like t-shirts of this will be sold or whatever.
Exactly.
But
yeah,
it's so underlining the central thesis. I did like when Teresa also like this is another kind of cynical sort of like we have to, you know, like when you finish writing an essay and you're padding it out a little bit and you just sort of repeat some of the stuff you've said again and be like, these are the things that I have told you about in this essay.
Yes,
there's a bit of that going on here where it's like
I agree.
I used to believe that young people were the only people who could fall in love. And the producers are like, we thought that. That's what we thought. You know, anyway, I it does work for me. But I think the final line here is just a little bit too much. Like, if you want me to believe this is a true moment between two people, which for all intents and purposes it is, don't lean so hard on the, like, talking points, you know?
Yeah. We can make this feel not like the show.
Yeah, I would prefer if this were one of the moments that felt a little bit more like two actual people, you know?
Yeah, real.
But that's the, you know, we get a little bit of reality, we get a little bit of TV. That's how the sausage gets made. She erupts in tears and laughter, hugging him close, kissing him on the lips, saying, "That was so good." I was not saying that. I was saying, no, it wasn't, you know, as I was watching on the couch. I don't know if I'm convinced. But I like that, you know, she liked it or at least was able to pretend that, you know, I believe she liked it.
Yeah.
I believe that she liked it, even if she probably didn't like it as it was happening as soon as it was, released. It's that it's already going to be such a big release of tension and just a big like exhalation or whatever that like this joke will probably land, you know, but like it's not my favorite moment.
Yeah. Anyway. You got me of it all.
Right. It's like, I pranked you with love. but Gary, continuing the hijinks, gets down on one knee and says,
"Teresa, I love you 1,000%.
Check cleared on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to stop believing.
Again, we're underlining, you know, checking back to that first. Yeah, we get it. We're doing callbacks.
I'm never going to stop believing that every day I choose you. Will you marry me?
And he produces a beautiful Neil Lane sparkler face out to the camera so that we can see the logo. And thank you very much to Neil Lane, the Diamond Demon, for his support and providing this. They embrace. He says, "I don't ever want to be without you." He doesn't say it like that. I don't know why.
He says it like he's about to ejaculate.
He says it like someone has popped out of the bushes and hit him with a poison blow dart.
"I don't ever want to be..."
She says, "I'm the happiest woman in the world." He grabs a rose from the nearby table, but this is no ordinary rose, Max Quinn. The entire rose from stem to flower bit. From one bit to the whole thing is a glimmering golden color. And Gary says,
"This rose is never going to wilt. It'll last forever. And it's a symbol of the love that we have for each other. So, Teresa, will you accept this rose?"
The audience applauds. She accepts, obviously. They have a shared ITM in which Teresa says, "We know that Tony and Billy would be so proud of us right now." Gary's daughters and granddaughters rush in from off camera to congratulate them at the dumping grounds. And as per tradition, they yell to the heavens, "We're engaged." Very nice. Happy times.
It's good for them.
When two people get to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Cut back to the studio for after the final rose. Jesse Palmer, 44 host, has his happy face on now. as he introduces Bachelor Nation's newest engaged couple, Gary and Teresa. And as the couple take their seats, JP44H marvels at Teresa's diamond ring, which evidently didn't quite get enough camera time in the actual footage to fulfill the Diamond Demon's satanic contract. Jesse says, "Look at that. Isn't that absolutely beautiful? It's a sparkler. It's absolutely perfect."
Thank you, Jesse.
I noticed, actually, just to cross back to The Bachelor's Australia briefly, that there was a ring that we talked about briefly, but the ring has continued to get some attention on social media after the fact. The Luke and Ellie ring. They did a ring reveal or something once they got their Instagrams back. And apparently some people were tricked into thinking that they were engaged, which is really funny because it just means that people were not watching The Bachelor.
No one was paying attention. Yeah.
Right. Like, even people who ended up following them, presumably because of it, although maybe they were just responding to their friends or whatever. They're like, no, it's we received it as a gift, as a token gift from Larson Jewelry, who are being tagged in this. But just so you know, it is not an engagement gift.
We were on TV, you see.
Yes, exactly. We were and are doing sponsored content for one of Australia's biggest jewelry brands. Quite funny. Teresa relays the story of the two times this season that she thought she was going to die. Good way to start things off. Firstly, when the headlights went out on the highway and she and Gary could have died in a traffic accident. And then again...
Who can forget?
I mean, I honestly, one of the most memorable moments from this season for me. And then again, when he told her, "You're not the right person for me to live with," on the final episode. To be fair, fucking dog move.
Absolutely. Awful.
I like that she's kind of taking him to task for it a little bit.
Good.
JP44H says, while nobody doubted the connection between the two of them since night one, quote, "a lot of people online have suggested that something changed during the overnight date to make him pick Teresa instead of Leslie." Jesse is begging for those juicy dates. Gary deflects. Another good line from Gary here. He asks how often Jesse asks his parents what happened on their overnight dates. But he also proceeds to answer, "There were moments in conversation that were subtle realizations." Because he's treading a tightrope walk here.
Because Leslie's here. She's here in the building.
You know, it's tough. But he goes, "I realized all of a sudden that there was a woman that knew how to maintain and nurture a relationship because of her and Billy. They had 43 successful years of marriage." And this, to me, felt in very poor taste.
That sucks.
Yeah, because, like, tell me why, right?
Well, so the reason that sucks is because it feels like a shot at Leslie, because her relationships haven't worked out. And just because, like, Teresa had the 43 years of marriage and then her partner died, it feels like Leslie is being chided, blamed, whatever, for her inability to sustain what Gary would consider to be a successful relationship. I hate that. It was in poor taste.
I totally agree. It invites this comparison that I don't think you really need to make.
No.
Obviously, the final two is all about inviting comparisons, but this specific one, I think, is like just not the angle I would go. Especially because, like, the audience, you know, just on a narrative sense, leaving aside her feelings and how we would hope that people treat each other or whatever, the audience has been asked to care about the narrative of Leslie. Because, like, specifically because her past relationships haven't worked out.
That's right.
Like, up until this episode, if anyone's rooting for her, and a lot of people are, it's because her relationships haven't worked out and we want this to be her happy ending.
Right.
So for the fact that is the reason that he chose not to choose her, it feels really gross.
It does. It feels like a total affront. It feels like it's been thrown back in her face. And you know, maybe what he could have said instead was like, "Teresa and I have this shared language of understanding what it's like to lose a partner and go through a long marriage and to come out the other side of it." And that would have been a fine thing to say.
Yeah, which I'm guessing is kind of what he meant. Like, you know, he has said things like that before.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he's just like you know, they, I mean, Jesse reintroduces the topic of sex, and I'm guessing he's kind of like scrambling to get off that topic.
Yeah.
But like,
oh yeah, that's true.
There's just a, there's a real dissonance here. Right? It feels like a shot at, Leslie in a way that I was not happy about. I'm sure it's just like, you know, if he had his time again, he would rephrase it or whatever, but like, I don't know. But then Teresa, to her credit, perhaps noticing that what Gary said could maybe open up a line of inquiry or, you know, introduce some level of doubt or whatever, delivers this mic drop. She's like, well, if he's not going to tell you exactly what happened in the fantasy suite, I'll tell you. I knocked his boots off. So it's like, this is more comfortable, in fact, you know, at this point. Also, just quickly, I've never heard the phrase knocked his boots off.
No, me neither. She, because you're supposed to knock your boots together.
I think that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
Although maybe if you knock them off, it's like incredible, like that much more.
Well, like, oh, you knocked my socks off. I've heard that before.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I wonder if it's one of those you've put to, it's like, does the Pope shit in the woods or is the bear a Catholic? You know what
I mean?
You put the two. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. She, as everyone's laughing, she goes like, oh, with my kisses, what? I'm a good kisser, which is, it's kind of funny. There is some real back padding where Gary, Jesse, and Teresa say that the Golden Bachelor has given hope to so many people. Teresa says, we inspired people. It was really wonderful. It was like a cultural movement. It wasn't just a show. It was real life. I'm like, we don't need this.
I'm just going to say it. I don't like Teresa.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder. Yeah. I don't love Teresa.
Like, or rather, let me say, I think the show did a really poor job of characterizing Teresa as wifey, as endgame for Gary, outside of the attributes that they share in terms of having lost partners and her outright obsession with him. From where I sit, I was like, I like Faith way better. I like Leslie way better. I think the show did a poor job of making Teresa seem like she was someone who could be right for Gary.
Yeah, I almost feel like they just went too hard in the underlining how into it Teresa was.
Yeah.
That we didn't get too much more texture, I guess, beyond that. I certainly just don't, I mean, like, this happens with everybody, particularly, I guess, on American Bachelor. It happens a lot where once you become a successful couple on this show, you become a real mouthpiece for the show as its ongoing, you know, as a purveyor of its ongoing continuity, you know, and, and particularly because the Golden Bachelor has been so successful in comparison with other recent seasons, they are already kind of being transformed in its image.
And yeah, definitely.
So whatever personality there might have been to uncover, I mean, obviously is still there, but like is no longer important to be, you know, scooped out necessarily.
Yeah, like, yeah, I guess that's true. Like it's more about like who the person the Golden Bachelor will choose is rather than presenting the person that the Golden Bachelor will choose as a fully fleshed out character. But I think that they did a way better job of that with Faith and with Leslie.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it'll be interesting to see how much more personality we will see on the Golden Wedding, because that's kind of the crux point, although as much as this is too, but like that's where the peak of their sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Spokespersonship for the Bachelor franchise will be, but also where elements of their personal lives will undoubtedly trickle in, you know, like
that's right.
The producers will have to try and find a balance in a live TV setting between those elements. One of like the, as scripted as possible for a live TV thing, you know, ABC special event with previous cast members and celebrities and stuff like that. But then also like the unpredictability of friends and family and, you know, whatever elements of these people's actual personality that they might insist or be able to insist on keeping in the end product.
Because exactly as you say, it is a peak for the show, and it also represents a baton pass on to the next season. So this is from a television perspective, extremely high stakes.
Yes. And as we talk about a baton pass, we also check in with America's Next Bachelor, Joey, who is present and gets a little vox pop here. Well, they, you know, they just ask him what he's thinking about the whole thing, whatever.
Joey's like, it's good.
Yeah, he says, to see you guys' warmth and love towards each other, for me, it makes me want to bring that same love and warmth to my relationship moving forward.
It makes me want to bachelor even harder.
Yeah, exactly. And like, as we're recording this, I believe his season has already been filmed, so I don't really know the kayfabe necessarily that he's like trying to thread the needle. There's a lot of needles mm-hmm. being thread here mm-hmm. as we're playing with timelines and stuff. A
lot of disbelief being suspended.
Yes. But he goes, thank you for inspiring me, and thank you for inspiring everyone here. I mean, it's been beautiful to watch. I just love the like pure sincerity, or, you know, fake sincerity, I suppose, that he's trying to...
Yeah, he comes off like a precocious child in this moment.
He does a little bit. We won't be covering his season, but no. I'll be watching it. I wonder if you'll be watching, because you watched...
Maybe.
A little bit of Bachelor in Paradise.
I liked Paradise.
Yeah. We then see a sneak preview of this upcoming season. It's worth noting that there are a few familiar faces in this preview clip, as well, of course, as Joey, we're both now incredibly invested in. We also see our close personal friend, April Lynn Kirkwood, Kathy Zippit Swartz, Susan Jenna Knowles, and Nancy, who owes the Hulk, asking themselves... appear for what looks like a group date or something on mm-hmm. the regular Bachelor. So we know that the women from this season are now beloved enough to justify popping into the flagship show. It also, I guess, implies to me that none of these women are the Golden Bachelorette, although I don't know if we know that.
Maybe. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. The impression I get is that Askin is a strong enough force that they can continue to be a part of the world of The Bachelor without any one of them needing to be appointed its new commander-in-chief. What do you call it?
Right. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Head of state. So I haven't mentioned this at all, but all episode, Jesse Palmer, 44 host, has been teasing a huge announcement that will change the happy couple's lives forever. It has been annoying, so I have spared you from hearing about it. Anyway, it's time for the big reveal. I think this is what he's referring to when he talks about this. Jesse says, do you remember on your first date, you both discovered that you wanted to learn how to speak Italian and you were hoping one day you could go and visit Italy? Question for you, Max. Do you remember this?
I remember this.
Okay, good. I remembered it too, but I wonder if, you know, maybe the additional 6 weeks.
Maybe a little bit of a, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, bon voyage. I think he says it wrong. I wrote this down wrong, so he must have said it wrong. That's right. We're sending you on a romantic vacation to Italy. Gary says, that sounds perfect. They can use it as their honeymoon trip because, quote, we are going to get married. We're going to do it as quickly as we can because at our age, we don't have a lot of time to waste. it's kind of fucked up. So as quickly as we can put together a wedding plan with the good people at ABC, we're getting married. And yes, this is where Jesse Palmer, 44 host, reveals what we all know, that they are going to get married, and we are in fact all invited to the Golden Wedding, which will be broadcast on ABC Thursday, January 4th, 2024, a date which is, as we're now recording, in the very recent past, the first televised Bachelor wedding since 2014.
Wow.
They have not been doing a lot of these, apart from like a couple of pop-ins that, like the first standalone, I should say, because they have had, I think, two as the backdrop of an episode or two episodes, I guess, of Bachelor in Paradise.
Yep.
Where the people from Bachelor in Paradise are getting married and they have the wedding and all of the people from the like future, you know, from the next season
are there. Whatever. Got you.
And they have some kind of horrible falling out or, you know, it's wonderful stuff. Yes, it aired very recently. We haven't watched it yet. We'll be discussing it on the next episode. Max Quinn, who do you think gets married?
I think
if you had to guess.
I think it's JP44H.
Ooh.
And then I would put him with Kris Jenner Susan.
Oh, I love that. Actually, yeah. You know what? I don't want to tell you you're wrong, but one thing that I do know about this Golden Wedding is that it will be officiated by none other than Kris Jenner, 44 host. No, not 44 host. They're not married yet. But
really?
Susan, who is a
Mrs. Jesse Palmer is going to
yeah.
officiate this wedding.
She's a licensed celebrant.
Oh, of course she is.
And so she will be looking after the festivities, which I think is such a perfect
move. That's cute. I really like that.
I think they've tried to invite as many of the women from the season as possible, but knowing that she will be looking after the festivities as opposed to just like some rando, I think bodes very well.
Yeah, like what are they going to do? They're going to roll Reverend Al Sharpton out of bed or something? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I'm trying to remember what they've done in the past. I think in the past, the couple has chosen someone, perhaps from their local church or whatever. And it may well be that this is who they chose. I don't know. They may well have been like, you know, I'd like someone from normal Indiana or wherever I'm from. What's this place called? I can't remember.
I couldn't tell you. I think Normal is a place in Indiana, though.
I think it is, yeah. Hudson, that's right. Confetti cannons fire off in the studio audiences. The families rush the stage. Jesse thanks us for watching. We made it. How are you feeling? Do we believe in love? Let's talk about it.
We believe enough in love to think that's good for Gary and good for Teresa. However, Gary and I have different taste.
Yes, I think I agree. And I also think that some of how the shit went down with his Leslie situation, that breakup, I think was like not so good.
Yeah.
I mentioned before, I was curious about like where the scales of justice are landing for you, you know, like does this happy ending leave you positive enough to remove the stain of that stuff? Where are you landing karma-wise?
Karma-wise, I want to say that justice for Leslie and let that be. But also, look, I feel fine and okay about this being the outcome. I don't feel enthused, but I feel more positive than I don't. And I really thoroughly enjoyed this season as a whole. And part of what made this season enjoyable was the drama and the way that Gary navigated or failed to navigate telling three women that he was, in fact, in love with them. So on the whole, I think that this was a largely positive ending. It does have a bit of an aftertaste in light of what we know. But on the whole, yes, good.
I think it's like this is just like an extremely above average season on the whole. And there was not a lot of drama, you know, no. There was not a lot of what you would traditionally call like reality TV drama. And so I think there needed to be something in the last few episodes. And like, generally speaking, one of the things that we've really liked about this season is that it was not like despairingly sort of like crushing people's hopes and dreams and stuff. It had a pretty light touch. Mm-hmm. And like, I would hope that Leslie has come out of this, you know, despite not really getting the treatment she deserved from Gary, she has probably come out of this reasonably well in terms of like being very beloved by everybody who watched the show and, you know, being in a pretty good place in her life. I would hope, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I can't help but feel optimistic about it just because like, you know, she has taken, some hits in the past and kept rolling. And I think she will continue to do so.
Yeah.
But yeah, we hope nothing for the best, nothing but the best for her, as you know, as we tend to do. And yeah, I just think this is a great season. I'm really enthusiastic about the possibility that Golden Bachelor might continue to give the franchise some length and longevity and some legs in the years to come. And would love an Australian season. All this stuff we've been saying a lot. But I think maybe we should pretty much call it there because we have to watch this wedding and get back behind the mics pretty soon. We might completely fucking change our tune. What if the wedding, we haven't seen it, what if the wedding ends in a shambles?
Hey, I don't know, but it's live TV and so there are guaranteed to be some amount of shambles somewhere and I can't wait to spot them and talk about them at length on the next episode of the Bachelor of Hearts podcast. Listeners, if you want to be friends with us, me, Xavi, the rest of our community, the best way you can do so is by following us at BOHpod on Instagram, or you can find us in the Bachelor of Hearts Osh posting group, along with some former guests of the show and former contestants on the show on Facebook. I don't know that there's too much more that we need to add, Zave.
We've been getting some new listeners and followers and stuff. I think now that the Bachelor's Australia has finished airing and is available to be streamed and caught up with. I think people are doing that in a way that I was not certain whether or not they would. I thought maybe because it all happened so quickly, I thought maybe the culture would just swiftly move on from it.
Interesting.
But I think maybe some people took the holiday break to go like, what was all that about or whatever?
And so let's catch up.
If you are a new listener, thank you so much for being here. We're really excited to be doing some new stuff soon. We'll be talking about the wedding very shortly and then telling you all about what we have planned for 2024, which is absolutely not nothing and quite a bit of fun stuff to look forward to. If you would like to, you can support the show by finding us on patreon.com/bohpod. If you're hungry for more episodes, there is a little back catalog of some bonus stuff in there, including a whole season that never made the main feed. How about that? You can do that if you want to, or you can not do that if you don't want to, or you can do it if you don't want to, but I wouldn't recommend it. Or you can not do it if you do want to, but again, you might have some regrets if that's the action you choose to take. Beyond that, listeners, there's nothing else. I mean,
there's
I hope you're doing
else.
Well. I hope you guys had a nice little holly break. I hope you didn't get sick. I hope you, trying to think of one callback from the start of the show. Can't think of anything. I'm too sick. Wait. I've just had an idea. Next episode, yeah. Max and I are going to get dressed up in our finest. And
great.
I think when you listen to our next podcast, you should also get dressed up.
I think that's a really nice
idea. Like you're
idea.
Going to a wedding.
Yeah, we're getting close to like Pastafarian territory here, and
in what way exactly?
You know how they have their like dress like a pirate day, and they're like all their stupid Pastafarian holidays.
Yes, we need to be stupider in 2024. It's our New Year's resolution. you thought it couldn't be done? We're gonna do it. Okay, great, listeners. Thanks so much for being here. We'll talk to you again soon. We love you.
Goodbye.